to a Hope 103.2 podcast.
At Christmas time, my wife, Buff, and I were invited to a rather posh party, sailing on a boat, enjoying beautiful food, wine, and company, all while we watched the sun go down over the beautiful waters of Pittwater. It was gorgeous. I met a friend of my wife that night, who in the course of conversation told me how well things were going for her. Her husband had just received a promotion, so they were financially free. They'd recently settled on a nice home on the northern beaches of Sydney, so life was secure. And the kids were all now at school, so she could finally begin to enjoy more leisure time. Then she paused, and out of nowhere began pensively to say, "But you know, sometimes I really wonder if I'm meant to be experiencing more. You know, some sort of larger spiritual dimension to my life." Now, my eyes began to light up at the fascinating turn in conversation. And perhaps she noticed, because as abruptly as she'd begun, she stopped. "Oh," she said, I don't want to talk about it. I'm not that interested, really. I'm not that interested at all." And within a matter of seconds, we were back to talking about the wine and pâté and all the other distractions around us that night. I had a couple of similar conversations that night. In fact, I have passing conversations like that at many of the parties I go to, and I almost never start the conversation myself. For me, this is a classic insight into Australian spirituality. You could call it a spirituality of distraction. It's not that we don't think about the great things. It's just that we find the distraction of the lesser things easier to handle. Most of us believe in the existence of God and the reality of the afterlife, according to recent research. But you'd never know it just by listening to the conversations at work or in the cafe or to the public discussions in the media. We have this extraordinary ability to think big but live small. In an interview with Rolling Stone magazine, the lead singer of U2, Bono, said he found exactly the same thing amongst his peers in the rock and roll industry. Let me quote him. He said, "I don't know anyone who's not interested in the idea of religion, whether they're opposed to it or for it. Yet no one talks about it. It's taboo. People will talk about body piercing easier at a dinner table these days than the idea of grace." In less colourful language, Richard Eckersley, an Australian social researcher, wrote a government report on trends in youth culture, and he described a similar avoidance of big issues and a corresponding obsession with the little ones. Let me quote from the report. "When a society fails to imbue people's lives with a sense of worth and meaning, then they must attempt to find these qualities as individuals. Robbed of a broader meaning to our lives, we appear to have entered an era of mass obsession, usually with ourselves, our appearance, our health and fitness, our work, our sex lives, our children's development, our personal development." In other words, although we all suspect that life's meaning is found in more than a new wardrobe, a better car, a nice house, a fun holiday, and a comfortable retirement package, we end up distracted by these things all the same. We're aware of a spiritual kingdom beyond the material one, but we often settle for the material anyway. Now, this devotion to things material instead of worshipping things spiritual is a very, very old habit. In fact, the Apostle Paul broached a similar theme in his famous speech to the Athenians recorded in Acts 17 in the New Testament. Having talked about how spiritual the Athenians were, he goes on to express disappointment that these ancient Greeks expressed their spirituality by worshipping material things instead of God himself. Let me quote from the speech, Acts 17. "God did this," says Paul, "so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by man's design and skill." Paul is speaking here about idolatry, the ancient practice of paying homage to created objects instead of honouring the Creator himself. Now, this may sound rather different from our modern passion for things material, and in a sense it is. None of us is likely to literally bow down before our car, our wardrobe, our house, or our investment portfolio, though I know a few people that come close. Nevertheless, the similarities between ancient idolatry and the modern spirituality of distraction are real enough. Both involve human devotion to created things rather than to the Creator. And although our pursuit of the material is hardly a conscious act of worship, it's often a deliberate substitute for worship. It's as if we hope that the accumulation of numerous smaller meanings will make up for the lack of a grand meaning, as if the sum of the material parts will be greater than the spiritual whole. It's a logic similar to this that led Paul on another occasion to make the same connection between the pursuit of material wealth and the Greek practice of worshipping idols. In Colossians chapter 3 in the New Testament, he wrote these words. Let me quote them. "Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry." How about that? Greed, the pursuit of material things, and idolatry, the worship of material things, are not so different after all, especially when they're a substitute for honouring the Creator himself. All of this has to make us wonder how the Creator feels about being replaced in the hearts of men and women by mere created things. We often think that what upsets God most are our individual vices, swearing, getting drunk, illicit sex, and so on. But one of the grand themes throughout the Bible is that God is disturbed most by the way human beings suppress their hunches about his presence in favour of an approach to life that pretends he's not there at all. Knowing we're mortal, but living as though we're immortal. Agreeing there's more to life than material possessions, but settling for them all the same. Admitting God's existence in the world, but refusing his influence in our lives. Having a sixth sense about God's kingdom, but preferring the taste, touch, sight, sound, and smell of our own private little kingdoms. This, according to the Bible, is at the heart of what God means by that unpopular word, sin. Whether it's modern materialism or ancient idolatry, replacing God with things is highly irrational, and worse, it's culpable, which is probably why Paul brought his speech to the Athenians to a close with these words. Let me quote them from Acts 17. "In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent, for he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice." I don't want to put this too dramatically, but the reality is the Creator of the universe can't stand it when his creatures, us in other words, decide to worship things instead of him. That's part of the reason there's a judgment day, says the Apostle Paul. The bottom line tonight is this. Most of us know there's more to life than clothes, the car, the house, the holidays, and the retirement package. So let's live like it. Let's not be distracted from the big spiritual things by pursuing the smaller material things. Let's give God the Creator his rightful honour.
Hope 103.2. Thanks for listening.